That's the Cannonball Adderley Quintet featuring Nat Adderley with pianist-composer Bobby Timmons's That Deer. Cannonball on alto sax, his brother Nat on cornet, Bobby Timmons on piano, Sam Jones on bass, and Lewis Hayes on drums. From the 1960 album, Them Dirty Blues. And in a way, that's what's happening today in Washington. President Obama and many others are singing Them Dirty Blues. The pressure is on, it is because they now, it's the oddest thing about politics. The president ends the war, and he will not escape liability for ending a war. He was wrong to end the war, according to the growing chorus. And, of course, it's coming from that quarter that historically has had problems with their lack of ability to rule and dominate the world. And if the world is to be ruled and dominated, it has to be done according to their vision. The president is not allowed to do that, which is why, of course, he hinted already that he doesn't need Congress to formulate a policy for what it is the United States will be doing, his administration will be doing as a response to the situation in Iraq, which is, to say the least, extremely serious and explosive and changing by the minute. But today I want to talk about the role of Bill and Hillary Clinton in this whole thing, because, you know, as you see how things are unfolding, you see a very interesting pattern, and that is the president increasingly is looking more and more alone. Now, here's a guy who's gone to great lengths to publicly pledge his troth to the Democratic Party. He has done so much fundraising. He has accepted, in fact, a nemesis during the presidential contest of 2008 as Secretary of State, a person completely unqualified for the job, and who, despite the hype and all of the PR and publicity around it, was quite unremarkable in her achievements and in the running of the State Department. But just the same, he had been compelled, and he still feels compelled for what reason I don't know, to enact their policies. And I say there because, let's be real about it, when Bill Clinton was president of the United States, we had a co-president for the first time in U.S. history, really. We had Hillary Clinton signing on and behaving as if she, too, were president of the United States. And Barack Obama early indicated a willingness not only to embrace their philosophy, and it was Bill Clinton's philosophy to move the Democratic Party at least to the center, if not to maintain a rightward course with it, to bring the party to resemble philosophically and ideologically the tenets of the Republican Party. It's the way that Bill Clinton envisioned expanding the party's political base. They already had the blacks. Black folks already were just ridiculously loyal to this party. For what reason, I don't know. The party of the Dixiecrats, but the black community had already been, pardon the pun, but slavishly loyal to the party. But what Bill Clinton was after was going after those, quote, conservative elements, unquote, that could be brought into the fold if only the Democratic Party philosophically presented itself as not a bad choice. because after all, it came relatively close to the Republican Party in its philosophy, but not with such a hard edge. There was a little bit more velvet there. It was a softer kind of racism. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton have played particular roles in this debacle. And, of course, we hear nothing about them. The media, the liberal media, have basically made it a point that they're hanging this war around the neck of the Republican George Bush, George W. Bush. And we, as a public, are associating it with Bush ourselves. But in fact, it was Bill Clinton who started this war. And he started this war specifically as a policy of what he called dual containment. That is, to, quote, neutralize, unquote, the two most, he at least he was told so, the two most dangerous states at the time, Iraq and Iran, in behalf of Israel. So with the dual containment of Iraq and Iran, according to Bill Clinton, in behalf of Israel, we would have a stable Middle East, because by then the United States would have replaced all of the repugnant regimes, that is to say repugnant regimes that they didn't particularly care for, and which, as is their, as the thinking within the White House, that there is a sense of, you know, we don't like a thing, we can change it. We have the army, we have an air force, we have a navy, we've got a covert and overt operations, we can, quote, take anybody out, unquote, that we don't particularly like. That's their thinking. And when you have done the fine job of putting things the way they ought to work in the interests of all these shared visions by corporate America, by the industrial, military industrial complex, by hidden hands, you would have arrived at the ideal solution. Well, Barack Obama had the nerve to declare that he was pulling out the troops. And he had made that very clear, that he was opposed to the war. As you know, I'm a staunch critic of Obama, but this is what the record reflects. When he was running, he had opposed the war. Hillary Clinton did not. She favored the war and voted for it. And so on October the 21st of 2011, the president announced that he was going to end the war in Iraq, which is, in the world of politics, making good on a promise. Well, that's not going to stand. He has to be given permission to do that. And we know the racial tensions in Washington, where, as an African-American president, or perceived African-American president, even that he's not permitted to decide on his own. Let me just share with you the thinking in Washington as evidenced in this interview with Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, speaking last Sunday on the State of the Union program, CNN's State of the Union program, with Gloria Borja and Dana Bash. And it tells you where they're going with this. The president, he maintains, is delusional. There's a very deep psychological term to use. The president is delusional when it comes to Iraq, he says. And in that statement, he is meant to convey, he's meaning to convey, that the president, one, is a neophyte. Two, he has a super simplistic analysis and appreciation of the complexities of the world. And three, basically, he's not made of the stuff that leadership requires. He doesn't have the guts and the spine to do the right thing. He has to be taught, and he's not up to doing that. He's not good at the job. So let's listen. In Senator Graham's interview here, he's sharing, and I want you to appreciate it as this, not only his opinion, he's kind of sharing the embodiment, the feeling among his hawkish ilk. It's a hawkish ilk in Congress of the president and of what it is, the pressures that they are responding to as legislators, the hidden hands that are pressing their buttons that are causing them in turn to press the president's buttons. As we speak, there's supposed to be a big fight going on, but let's listen to the tone and you will get a sense of the thinking in that circle. Here's Senator Graham.
We need to put a red line with Iran. You know, you can help stabilize.
How do you do that?
Well, you just sit down and talk with them. We need to get Turkey involved.
I'm sorry. It's sort of hard for me to believe that I'm hearing a Republican saying sit down and talk with Iran.
Do you realize what's happening here? If Baghdad falls and the central government collapses in Iraq, the Iranians are the biggest winner. We're the biggest loser. ISIS, as Nick says, operates with impunity from Syria to Baghdad. They will hit us again. They will march on Jordan. Three things very quickly. Put American air power into the game. These guys are not 10 feet tall. Stop the advance on Baghdad. Get people on the ground that the Iraqis trust. Maliki must go. Get a new government in place, right? And hit Syria. If you don't deal with Syria in a coordinated fashion, maybe with Turkey, regional Sunni Arab states, you'll have this happen all over again in Iraq.
Do you think the United States should now open a back channel or put it, or
he's saying a front
it,
channel,
front
right?
channel
I think
with Iran in order to deal with the situation in Iraq?
We should be the ones who save Baghdad so the central government can survive. But to ignore Iran and not tell them, don't take advantage of this situation, would be a mistake.
One last question. We started the segment by showing the toll to the U.S. in dollars and, mm-hmm. and more importantly, in lives. Looking, if somebody out there has a friend or a loved one who died in Iraq and they're looking at the situation right now, how do they not think perhaps that their loved one died in vain?
Well, the Iraqi, here's the good news. The Iraqi people do not want to be governed by ISIS. The Shias don't want to be governed by Iran. They actually want to move forward. We were well on our way. The lack of a residual force, this stubborn-headed president we have who thinks he knows better than everybody else, who withdrew troops and exposed this country to the inevitable, needs to change his policies quickly. If he does, we can still save this.
Stubborn-headed,
delusional, detached president. But that's the last bad thing I'm going to say. Mr. President, a lot of people want to help you because we're in it together. The number of people that could die in this country from getting this wrong is going to be far greater than 4,000 because they're getting weapons they didn't have before. The economic chaos to the world is going to be far greater than the money we spent in saving Iraq. This is another 9/11 in the making. The FBI director has warned us in Congress that Syria and Iraq present a direct threat to our homeland. You got foreign fighters from America and Western Europe occupying this battle space. They're operating with impunity. Get into the game, Mr. President. Leaders are judged not by the fact that they never make a mistake, but how they adjust to their mistakes. Bush made plenty of mistakes. I've made plenty of mistakes. Obama's made plenty of mistakes. But we have an opportunity, and time is running out, to turn this around. Get involved with air power. Stop the march toward Baghdad. Deal with Syria. But get a new government in place as quickly as you can that will bring the Iraqis back together for a counteroffensive.
Senator,
if we don't, God help us, because we're next.
Senator, we could talk about this for hours and probably not scratch the surface. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, you get the sense of what it is. The president, he says, is hard-headed, and the president is thinking that he's smarter than everybody else. Now, why is it that we're not hearing from the Greek chorus here. Why is it that we're not hearing from Hillary and Bill Clinton? As he said, even the Republican is talking about, well, yes, George Bush made mistakes. Well, they could call them mistakes after, you know, 5,000 soldiers have died and thousands more injured. You could just brush this off as a mistake because your son and your daughter are not dying. This is, you know, becomes a kind of esoteric exercise right now. It's a nebulous thing. In the aftermath of war, or as Hillary Clinton calls it, the fog of war, people could afford to wax philosophical about it. But their ideas about war involve a whole bunch of people dying. And again, it is not about U.S. interests as such. If we understand the context, as Tariq Ali told us, and as Professor Beeman on Monday had told us, this is about a history of Western involvement, very, very bad involvement in the region. This that we are witnessing today is the end result of a long string of consistently bad policy. What people like this senator is saying, Senator Graham is saying, is that doesn't matter. It's not the policy that you fix. The policy is perfect. It's the method. We got to just, you know, adjust the method from time to time. But when it comes to Hillary and Bill Clinton, let's talk about that. Bill Clinton started the war in Iraq, and we have to be real clear about that. The notion that, well, the Republicans are at fault, and it was a Republican president, George W. Bush, who started it and brought this whole thing to a great mess. It was Bill Clinton, the great Democrat. Bill Clinton, the liberal. Bill Clinton, who decided that, you know what, we need to go to war. And they always use that pronoun, you know, the we thing. It shows up a lot. What do we want to do there? We want to carry out, we have two countries in the region that we need to maintain our relationship with, because we are beholden to them by treaty and by what Bill Clinton actually used the word moral obligation. And that is Israel and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia did not have a history of fighting its own wars that it created. And we discussed the role of Saudi Arabia here. It always has rented the U.S. Army and military power. And the United States has always willingly obliged to fight its proxy wars. Thousands and thousands of people are being told every Memorial Day about the noble ways in which the sons and daughters of America died for freedom and democracy. No, they didn't die for freedom and democracy. They died because of backroom deals cut between countries for purposes that we know very little about, really. We have some knowledge of it, but we don't know the full extent of it, because I guess it would be so terrifying. But that's why they're dying, and that's why they're being sent to war. And Bill Clinton initiated this thing by the Iraq Liberation Act. I mean, really, the Iraq Liberation Act basically said that Congress approves the government's official position, its official policy, was to remove governments, the government that it didn't like. It was to wage war. It was to engage in this kind of activity in contravention of international norms and laws. But Bill Clinton made it the policy. This is what our official policy is. Remove the government in Iraq. Assist in the downfall of that government. Fund covert operations to cause great destabilization. And in the end, to have the power to obliterate Iraq if to save it. That was Bill Clinton. That was the great liberal. And guess what? He actually had said on the campaign trail when Hillary was running, when Hillary was then a foil for this, she's running for president in 2007 on the campaign trail, Bill Clinton denied it. He denied it completely. And I'm not making it up. Here's a clip of Bill Clinton basically saying that he was against the war, although he authorized it, set it in motion, made it happen. Here's Jake Tapper, the senior political correspondent for ABC News. He was following then-Senator Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. And this is what unfolded in Iowa in 2007.
Well, Senator Hillary Clinton heads to Iowa today to talk about health care reform, but she may find herself overshadowed by comments made by her husband, former President Bill Clinton, who's now saying that he opposed the war in Iraq from the very beginning, a war that his wife voted to authorize and that he did not exactly seem to be protesting at the time.
The former president was talking to Iowans about military families and then a startling claim.
Even though I approved of Afghanistan and opposed Iraq from the beginning, I still resent that I was not asked or given the opportunity to support those soldiers.
Bill Clinton opposed the war in Iraq from the beginning? At the time, the former president said United Nations inspectors should be given more time to look for weapons of mass destruction, but he was hardly, at least publicly, an opponent of going to war against Saddam Hussein.
This guy is, he's got a very dangerous program. We need to eliminate it.
On his own foundation's website, a 2003 speech where Clinton said, quote, I supported the president when he asked the Congress for authority to stand up against weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. All of this refocuses attention where his wife does not want it, on her 2002 vote to authorize the president to go to war.
And perhaps my decision is influenced by my 8 years of experience on the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue, in the White House, watching my husband deal with serious challenges to our nation.
And it's in Iowa where President Clinton has refocused attention on the war in Iraq. Iowa, with its sizable population of anti-war liberal Democrats, where currently in the lead is Senator Barack Obama, who opposed the war in Iraq back in 2002, going so far as to speak at an anti-war rally.
Okay, so we got that. The same president who, in 1998, got the so-called Iraq Liberation Act passed, specifically, now this was its purpose. The purpose was to replace the regime in Iraq. Now, let's understand what that says. That means the head of the nation and the main legislative body of the country are in agreement, openly in agreement, saying that it is the nation's stated policy to basically go to war with a country with whom there is a problem, as the United States sees it, we don't agree. The United States does not agree with its policies or with its leadership. Therefore, by law, you have to understand how insane this is. And this is why I come to the word delusional. This is done in the open. The Iraq Liberation Act says it is now the stated policy of the United States to replace the government, to fund covert operations, to destabilize the country, to make war on that nation, and to make sure that all of this is done within our system of freedom and democracy and our democratic process. This is how delusional this country is. And that was Bill Clinton. And then we just heard Hillary talking about her 8 years of experience, she calls it. Her observation of what was going on in the White House. Just her observation is the same as experience. And she's on the campaign trail telling America, my observation as the first lady, I'm not elected, but of course we know she was co-president at the time. My mere observation of the process is experience. Barack's election by the people, and it's a mere technicality. But I actually have the experience because I was married to the guy who did all of this. And that, I by osmosis, it accrues to me as experience in the White House. And who is delusional? Who is delusional here? This is the same person who voted for the war, who on her book tour now just blithely said, oh, well, you know, I was kind of wrong about that. I'm sorry about that. I've come to see that I was sort of wrong about that. But in the meantime, let's discuss me, because it is all about me and me getting to be the real, real president this time. Here's a person who went along with it, voted for the war. And beyond that, as Secretary of State, said that she would have no problem whatsoever obliterating Iran under nuclear attack by the United States. This is what she said. Who is delusional? But now on the book tour, where the liberal press has decided, oh, please, Hillary, can you please, please just give us one little indication that you will do us the great favor of running? None of this is in play. None of this is being discussed. They all agree to hang this stone around Barack Obama's neck. A man who said from the beginning, I'm against the war, and a man who did, in fact, decide to bring the war to an end. And now all of the repercussions of previous administrations and the Clintons, the most recent reference point that we have here with respect to this, continuing the U.S. official policy and endorsing it and restating it and underscoring the official policy of the United States. It is the official policy of the United States under Bill Clinton. He made sure about that. Never mind the fact that Kofi Annan, then Secretary General of the United Nations, had said this whole thing is illegal. U.S. actions in Iraq were illegal. The U.N. was in one accord with that. But the United States doesn't represent or doesn't really respect the wish and the will of the United Nations. It doesn't recognize the authority of the International Criminal Court. It doesn't. It's a renegade government in that respect. But curiously, the questions are not being asked either of Bill Clinton for his role in starting this. What was his purpose? The purpose was, as I said, his policy of dual containment. In order to check what was then clearly a reaction, as Tariq Ali told us, a rising resentment to occupation, and this was inevitable. They have multitudes of problems among themselves, religious faction fighting against other religious factions. But they all are in agreement that Western imperialism and the occupation in behalf of the state of Israel and the dealings of the United States and the United Kingdom, this is also about Britain and France, but Western powers generally, their role in regarding this entire Arab world as, you know, pretty much a slave plantation. There's no reason to respect this. These are not real people with real governments and real countries and real lives. You could do what you want. So you could have a guy from South Carolina, slave state, basically say, look, it's very simple. Get some planes in the air, bomb them to smithereens. That's how you solve this problem. No one yet has called for a reexamination of U.S. policy, the kind of policy made by Bill Clinton. The policy of getting the United States and its government, ostensibly representing the will of the people, to behave like a renegade and a marauder, and putting it, you know, sprinkling perfume on this rotting corpse. That is the work that needs to be done. Nobody's asking these questions. Hillary is running around selling her book, lying all over the place, talking about, well, you know, I'm going to weigh my options, and she is the very picture of the privileges, white skin privilege in America. You could have absolutely no qualifications for the job, but you will be able to get it because you organize the society this way, and you play the game that way, and you get what you want. As the wife of an elected official to damn near president of the United States yourself, and talking to people and telling them about your experience in public life and public office as if you, but now the question really is, it is quite possible that we had a real co-president of the United States all along. But Bill Clinton is the person. We need to understand that. The Democrats need to own it, and those people who slavishly support this party ought to understand how this whole thing in recent years unfolded. This was a Democratic policy initiated by a Democratic president, fully in alignment with the most retrograde elements in Congress and in our society. That's what we had. And running around now making more money than ever and still being thought of as the most popular president of all time and fully employing the services of a compliant press and media to promote these two individuals, Bill and Hill, as the epitome of what America ought to desire in leadership. And they're now going to hang this guy. Barack Obama has no clue. He had no idea that when he was thinking about running and aligning himself with the Clintons as his political, how could I call it, his political godparents, aligning himself with their philosophy, aligning himself with that shift within the Democratic Party, aligning himself with this cacistocracy, as they're called, this government by the worst people in society. He has to inherit this now. Even though he's made a valiant effort. See, this is what politics does. This is the quagmire it brings. When you don't have the faith in the people who elect you, when you maintain a distance between yourself and the people who give you the mandate for leadership, when you believe that your job is to fulfill your mission or your obligation to other people and other things and other plans, this is what happens. So that even when you attempt to do the right thing, they will all agree that you're wrong because you're betraying the essential plan here. In other words, as of 1998, let's just use that as a watermark. And we know it was way before then, because this is the 35 year anniversary of the so-called Arab uprising, the Shah of Iran, and the U.S. relationship with that regime. Tariq Ali told us that in the Muslim world, in the Islamic world, the resistance to occupation was not a mystery. Everybody expected it. The resistance to the kind of war and the suffering targeted at these nations for all kinds of reasons in behalf of the industrial world, the corporate world, the military world, all these things that were done, brutal things, assassinations, I mean, the most brutal kinds of things that were funded by this government under various acts and things that we don't know. Operations, covert operations that were meant to cause just cataclysmic changes in these parts of the world. And then made to look like it look, here's yet another example of these folks who just can't govern themselves. But the question is, when will Bill Clinton be called to account for his role in creating this debacle? When will Hillary Clinton be called to account for her role in creating this debacle? What are your thoughts? 888-874-4888. We'll take this break and come back to your thoughts right after that. We'll be right back. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and your calls at 888-874-4888. Sarah, you're on the air.
Oh, greetings to you, Eutrice.
Thank you, and to you too, Sarah. What have you to say?
Eutrice, going back to your first audio clip that you played, where Lindsey Graham was doing his usual spiel, and it once again, it shows how this country and white men in particular to take it upon themselves, because one of the things that he mentioned was that Nouri al-Maliki has to go. That's the same thing they said about al-Assad, Colonel Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein. They always take it upon themselves to say what leadership in what country needs to go when these people elected their leadership and put them in play. But here it is that you are sitting across the pond and you are making decisions as to who needs to go. The other thing that ticked me off was when he was stating about the high hand of the military needing to come in there and to take care of matters by exhorting, you know, tremendous forces, using them bombing and destroying things in order within which for the United States to get its way. Now, then trying to make a correlation that we don't want to have something like a 9/11. You are creating a 9/11 situation because you are going into these people's country, replacing their leadership, doing all of these things. The situation that's happening in Iraq right now, Eutrice, is the same follow that started happening when the United States start arming these mercenary groups that are a coalition of people from all of the Arab republics that they put together within which to do this rampage. They left Libya and Mali. No, they moved into Syria. They couldn't finish up with al-Assad. They got driven out. No, they're back into Iraq. They're doing these things. This is their handiwork. They're the ones who put this together. No, these people, they are loose. They're uncontrollable. They're running rampant. No, they want to put it and blame it on the people in their country that this uprising is happening in, and they don't want to blame themselves. This is what you call deflecting the blame of responsibility onto their victims. Because they're the ones who started this mess. They're the ones who went against the UN Charter and everything else in order to arm a resistant movement in these countries. No, they can't control them. If the genie is out the bottle, you can't put it back in, to squeeze the toothpaste or whatever analogies you want to use. They have created this mess. And Clinton and all of them, they can talk all they want. They can try and blame the black guy because this is what this is all going to come down to. Black people has always been used as the blaming tool, and whenever white people create their mess and they don't want to accept personal responsibility, here goes that word again, they're always going to find somebody black to say, okay, we're going to blame the black guy, say he did it, and we're going to get ourselves out of here. Because this is what they've been doing. And that's what the Clinton has been doing. That's why he says, I don't care about this election. They can do whatever they want. They can put her up there. They can put her on bookstores, whatever they want to do. She is a murderer. As a matter of fact, she's worse than her husband. Because as you said, as a female, she's going to show that she has the balls to take and do what it needs to do, as we see with any group, any so-called oppressed group that you put in charge of a situation, in order to show that they have the gumption. They're going to do worse than what the people before them did in order to validate themselves and that they're being worthy for that position. And Hillary Clinton would be out there authorizing more invasion, more dropping of bombs, more destruction of lives because she wanted to prove that she's better than Barack Obama and even better than her husband.
Well, I think you're dead on here. This is a very important piece of work that alternative media needs to do, and that is the narrative that has been constructed so far is so wrong, it's so inaccurate, it's so wrong on so many levels that you can't even keep track of it. But when you look at the dynamic unfolding, just the same, it's an amazing thing that in the middle of all of this heat, they haven't escaped, and neither did Senator Graham. He said, yes, George Bush made mistakes, but nobody is talking about the Clintons.
Exactly.
Nobody's talking about them.
It's a continuation of policies from each administration. Each administration, they leave an agenda for foreign policy that needs to be carried out. And all of these administrations do, like Bush 1, Clinton finished up what Bush 1 left undone. Then Bush 2 came in and carried on Clinton policy. No, Barack Obama is in here continuing on. It's a continuation of foreign policies that getting worse and worse as each administration go down the line. That is why they keep contingent forces from each of these former administrations into the new administration coming in, because they have to continue the policies of this globalization effect that they have been doing.
Well, thanks for your call, Sarah. Thank you so much for contributing today.
You're welcome, Yatrice.
Thank you. From New York, Jay, you're on the air.
How are you, Yatrice? It's always an honor to come behind Sister Sarah. I just learned something that Hillary Clinton had cojones. I'm just being funny. But the thing in all of this is, when you talk about Barack Obama, it seems to me like, you know, there's two sides to this. There are those who say that he's doing the right thing, and then there are those who say he's doing the wrong thing by not putting the forces back in harm's way. I mean, realistically, with what we have created over in that region, you really have no choice but to send the troops back over there, or it's just going to be total chaos, and it's going to absolutely spread. Now, I mean, I think it's more or less who's going to manage this situation once Obama's out of office is what's being determined right now. Is it going
to
be
one? They're not waiting for Obama to be out of. They're managing it now. They've been managing it since his election.
Yeah,
even
but
before, part of what he did was sign on to the program from the beginning.
Right. But then also, let's be honest, he did say that he was against the war and that he was going to have the troops leave. Which they have left. But when I say manage it, it's more in terms of, as far as the next president goes, what will be their response? Will it be more military action, or will it be less military action? The way that these hawks act and respond to this matter, I just don't see it not being more of military action and more deaths on the part of the American people, with them not really understanding what's at stake. Because if you really think about it, what has been gained based on what was told to the American people was going to happen once we went to war with Iran, Iraq, overtook Libya, and all of these other places within the region? It seems to me that the region is far worse off now with those strong leaders that was in place that basically kept the people in line. Now you have a group of individuals that are totally putting that region into chaos. And we don't really talk too much about what's going on with Israel, because at some point in time they're going to come into play in this, and then what happens? Does it escalate even further? So, I mean, this whole thing is a situation to where we should have never been there in the first place. We should have basically dealt with it on a level of closing our borders. At some point in time, America is going to have to shut down the borders.
Well, you're cracking up there, Jay. I'm sorry, the telephone interference is kind of... Are you there?
Yeah, I mean, at some point in time, we're going to have to close down the borders in this country and address and deal with the issues here, because if we're not as...
Uh-oh, we lost you. Sorry about that, but thanks so much for your call. We got the essence of what it is you were saying. The question I'm posing today is, how is it that we have managed so far to come along with this discussion, understanding who the culprits are? And the Bill and Hill combo is nowhere on that list. They have been exempted, and that is the deliberate effort of the media. They're fulfilling their role. Ali from New York, you're on the air. Hello, Ali.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to say that, you see, President Obama never thought, I guess, you know, he didn't calculate what would happen to him. You know, his presidency was defined by the time that he had to go and apologize after that incident happened with Professor Gates. Remember that?
Yes.
Yes. So what I'm trying to say is that if he thinks now it's not finished, okay, it's not over. So if he gets blamed for this thing, I guess he calculated his presidency. He thought that he will have power. He has no power. And just going on TV after this man got attacked by a white man, white supremacy, and then he had to apologize for this guy attacking Professor Gates. It's the same thing now that he has to do. He's going to have to defend himself for taking the soldiers out of Iraq. I don't think, and this is not the only thing that is going to happen to him. He's probably going to have to go on TV, excuse himself for taking the soldiers out. And now he's being blamed all over for taking the soldiers out and for and this problem that is happening in Iraq. The fact of the matter is that I just heard today, I heard on Gary Knowles' show saying that these people, they have been trained by the United States government before they went to Syria. They are leaving Syria, and now they're going into Iraq. So it is not a surprise.
But make no mistake about it, Ali. You're right on point here. But the thing is, we shouldn't be naive about President Obama's approach either. Because while, you know, the troops were removed, the covert programs and the drone programs, you know, took the place of soldiers dying on the battlefield. So it is not that President Obama himself is, you know, just the great savior here. It is just that symbolically parting ways with the established order is being frowned upon, and they're moving against him on that.
No, I agree with what you're saying. It's true. But the point that I'm trying to make is, as a black man, he should have thought better to run for president of the United States. That is my point.
Thank you, Ali, for your call.
Thank you.
Joseph, you have the floor, but for a short time as we get close to the end of the program.
No, I really don't have anything much to say.
Okay.
I was just listening, basically.
Oh, I see. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, you know, this is where the issue is right now. And you see how, you know, it's being orchestrated again because the media is playing this great role of shielding the people who should be called to account right now to discuss in great detail how it is that the United States basically formulated this formal policy with the Iraq Liberation Act of 1998. Under Bill Clinton, to specifically remove governments from being democratically elected, governments that the United States does not agree with. This is a policy. And when people like Senator Graham talks about delusional attitudes in Congress, these are the delusional attitudes that for more than 100 years now have been informing U.S. policy in the region. So we can't escape it. It's not going to happen that we could escape it. This from Donald. He says, Hillary is exempted because she has a role to play as this country's next president. The powers that be have a plan and are paving the way for Hillary's presidency. Absolutely legitimate view. I think that's right on the money right there. Thanks so much for joining me today. Tomorrow, of course, it's Free Your Mind Friday, and I'm sure we'll continue the conversation then as well. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Occupied Territory America with Mike Fader. Let me know what you're thinking. Write me a note at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. But I hope this discussion piques your interest and, you know, sharpens your observation so you're keeping tabs on how these things are developing here and the role of the media in shielding the Clintons from accounting for their role in this horrible catastrophe. Take care.